Hey everyone, thanks again for joining us on whatsupwestman.ca. This is a 2-for-1 at the movies episode. I'm Sean Cameron, as always joined by my counterpart, the Wizard of Netflix, Steven Jackson. And tonight we are taking on The Avengers. The Avengers absolutely blew away the box office this weekend, folks, with over $200 million in revenue. They've already paid the bills, which almost guarantees a sequel. But we'll talk about this as well. I've got a feature chat with Eric Markowich. Now, Eric Markowich is a Brandon, Manitoba dancer who's now applying his trade professionally in places like Toronto, Halifax, and hopefully one day, the Big Apple. But we've got this, we've got The Avengers, and we've got community theater happenings coming up right after this on whatsupwestman.ca, 2-for-1 at the movies.
You were made to be ruled. In the end, it will be every man for himself.
What do?
We get ready.
There was an idea to bring together a group of remarkable people. So when we needed them, they could fight the battles that we never could. Gentlemen, what are you prepared to do?
No offense, but I don't play well with others.
Big man in a suit of armor. Take that away, what are you?
Genius, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist.
If we can't protect the Earth, you can be damn sure we'll avenge it.
Dr. Banner, your work is unparalleled, and I'm a huge fan of the way you lose control and turn into an enormous green rage monster.
Thanks.
So, as I mentioned in the opening, I am joined by the Wizard of Netflix, Steven Jackson, and we are talking about The Avengers this week. Welcome once again, Steven. I know you're back in Toronto, and welcome back to the show.
Well, thanks very much. Wizard of Netflix. Wow. I'm still working on trying to connect with them to, you know, maybe they'll sponsor our show here. But
Absolutely. I thought you'd appreciate that one. I was kind of keeping it in my pocket and seeing if you would catch on to it when we were doing the opening here. So, like I said in the opening, we are talking about The Avengers. The Avengers has absolutely demolished the box office this weekend.
It's incredible, isn't it? Like, I never thought it would. I mean, I knew a good idea that it was going to overdo Harry Potter, but $200 million. So I think you're going to see probably by later tomorrow, you're going to see that number come down maybe into like the high 190s. Because sometimes the Sunday night box office doesn't exactly tell you the whole story.
Right.
But it's going to be pretty close.
Awesome. As always, like I say, I just want to take a quick moment to mention our affiliation and thank you so much again to CJ 106.5, The Alternative Edge, for allowing us to be on the radio. And as always, you can check out our episodes on iTunes by searching What's Up Westman, or obviously on the website whatsupwestman.ca. So now that I've got that out of the way, The Avengers. I'm going to give Steven the floor in just a minute to tell us about it, but I also want to get him, before we do that, to tell us a little bit about the show Real Life Superheroes and something he's got going on in Toronto.
Well, thanks for asking about this. Obviously I'm a comic book freak, as it were. Real Life Superhero is this kind of play that kind of got to my heart a little bit. Over the last number of years, we've kind of noticed this kind of phenomenon of real people putting on superhero costumes and going out into the community and such. And for also ultimately different reasons and such. But Real Life Superhero tells a story of one such person who one night, while kind of performing the duties of a superhero, as it were, is murdered in a back alley. And where it kind of goes from there is a writer kind of trying to figure out what makes this person, what made this person go out and put the superhero costume on through talking to people that the person knows. Some of the characters, like obviously he has a wife in this show. He has a best friend. There's a comic book store owner, a police officer, and ultimately the person who murdered him, actually.
Right.
And so the story kind of reveals kind of the last night he was, I guess, on duty, as it were. And then in kind of in between talking about exactly what made him go out and do what he did. And it's not really sure. It's funny. I was just talking to the director of the show, who's going to be directing it in August for me. And he just asked me, he said, so exactly, okay, what are your feelings on this? Is it comic book or is it real life? And I said, I ultimately said, I think for him, it starts off as comic book, the main character.
Right.
But as the realities of being this hero, as experiencing danger, experiencing all these moments, it becomes real life to him. But then the other question that came up, of course, is that I don't really give any answers as to why he does what he does throughout the course of the play, really. But right. I asked a lot of questions. And I said, I think that's what happened to me, because that's what I was asking. Like, I was thinking, I was writing the play and thinking, well, is he thinking this? Is he thinking this? I mean, there's so many options of what could have been going through his mind to do what he was doing. And I think that's what a great play does. I think it asks more questions than answers.
Excellent, excellent. Well, I wish you the best with that. That's happening for our Toronto listeners August 22nd to the 26th, 10 p.m. showtime at the Winchester Street Theater, right?
Yeah, probably a 7:30 showtime.
7:30?
I got to change that, but yeah.
Okay, we are looking at a 7:30 showtime, and that's Myanmar Gaslight Productions, Real Life Superhero, happening at the Winchester Street Theater for our Toronto listeners. And that's, luckily enough, 80 Winchester Street if you're looking for it. So thank you very much for that. We're going to now jump from the story of real life superheroes to the story of superheroes that make an insane amount of money. We are talking about the Avengers. I'm going to turn it over to you. Give us kind of the quick comic book synopsis of what people can expect at this movie.
And quick is not easy for me when it comes to comic books. But, so this is, if people have been obviously following the movies recently in the last like 3 years, this is kind of the culmination of about at least 4 years of hard work between Marvel and I think it's Paramount Studios, I think. And it's Avengers. It's the kind of creation of putting all these major superheroes like Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, and putting them into one movie as a team. And so this story pretty much is there's a world threat that happens, aliens attacking the Earth. Being guided by Thor's brother Loki, and the heroes have to put aside their differences and their different characters to save the world, and that's pretty much the entire synopsis of the entire movie.
For sure, we look at some of the comic book movies from past, and especially comic book fans are usually kind of ruthless on the movies. For the simple fact is they want it as close to the original storyline as possible. Does the Avengers kind of follow that path, or do they deviate for a Hollywood backing?
Well, they have to deviate, to a degree. I mean, what's fascinating about this movie is how close it is, but I know exactly what you mean. I mean, I talk to a lot of comic book folks and they get very mad at all these movies like Iron Man and Thor and such. And I actually had a huge discussion with a group of people at a party once about this, and I said, we should be really grateful that Hollywood is doing it as well as they are right now, because if anyone remembers some of the Marvel movies that came out of the 70s, you know, we got to remember that there was a time when they didn't do it right at all. And so this movie does follow somewhat close to a plan. If anyone goes back to read the original Avengers comic books, Loki was the first villain in the Avengers.
Okay.
It did involve Thor, Hulk, and Iron Man. Captain America didn't come till later. Hawkeye wasn't in there until like about the 16th issue, I think. Black Widow was way later. But It's pretty close. I mean, it's as close as we're going to get. Pretty much Loki just took on the Avengers by himself. This time he's got a good group of aliens to help with that. So, but ultimately it's pretty I mean, it's obviously far away in the storyline and such, but it's a very good adaptation of the comic book.
Excellent, excellent. I'm thinking of the one character, and I had kind of done a little bit of research before going to see the movie because I like to do that and be a bit more educated on it. I read comic books when I was a kid, but to no great extent compared to, you know, some of the big comic book fans out there. And we have a bit of a crossover with, is it Archer, I believe?
Oh, Hawkeye.
Hawkeye, okay, that was it. I couldn't remember the name, but...
Hawkeye's a great character. It's quite fascinating. In the comic books, he actually started off as a villain of Iron Man originally, yeah. And then they realized he was quite popular, and he actually partnered up with Black Widow, who is also a villain.
For sure.
And then around about the 16th issue of The Avengers, they brought him into The Avengers as a hero.
Okay. Yeah. Because I was kind of wondering about that, because I remember seeing, you know, a little bit about that character in the comic books, but I was thinking to myself, wasn't he a good guy? But, you know, and not that we're giving a ton away, but there is a little bit of a twist in there for that with him. But yeah, he definitely starts out as a bad guy. And I thought, this doesn't seem right.
Yeah. You know, well, hey, at one point he actually ended taking over the role of Giant Man, I think, or Goliath, I think, where the character who could increase his size to ginormous height. So he actually got rid of the bow and arrow at one point.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So okay. I'm one of those comic book people you talk about. Yeah. Actually, it's funny. If I look at my wall right now, I can see I've actually got the first, I think, 4 or 5 Essential Avengers. And it's all the black and white issues from the early days.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I'm not necessarily a huge Avengers fan, but I do like comic books. So.
Right. And, you know, it is nice, and it's neat for the fans to see them all come together. Because, like you say, it's a movie that's kind of been 5-6 years in the making. I do have to ask one question, though.
Sure.
With regards to the Hulk mm-hmm. in this movie.
Yeah.
Was Edward Norton not the Hulk in the most recent ones?
He was. There was some creative differences that happened between him and the studio. And okay. So when they came, they were going to do this movie, Edward Norton backed out.
Okay.
It's a shame because he's a really good actor, but.
And that's the guy that's playing him in this movie,
Mark Ruffalo.
Mark Ruffalo was the original Bruce Banner, wasn't he?
No, not at all. In fact, there's actually been like there's the two Hulk movies before that. Actually, there's the Ang Lee one as well too.
Oh, okay, that's the one.
Played by Eric Bana.
Eric Bana, and that's who I got him mixed up with.
And Edward Norton, and yes, and then Mark Ruffalo took over, and he's he's a Canadian actor, first of all. What's interesting is that he really made this movie into his own. Like, I found him absolutely compelling watching this entire movie and exactly where his character was going to go next.
Oh, absolutely.
I want to see a Hulk movie now with him.
Yeah. You know, you find yourself quite drawn, and the Hulk is kind of the latest, or the, I guess you could say the last reveal in the movie, right?
Very much so. Cause, they kind of want to leave him. I think the greatest danger with the Hulk is that, I mean, how much of the Green Hulk do you show, and how much do you show of Bruce Banner? And right. That's what the challenge was. And I think they leaving as long as they did made a big difference. He made a much more bigger impact, I think, on this entire movie.
Right. And I think I can remember a conversation you and I having at the Keg Steakhouse. There's our shameless plug this week. The Keg Steakhouse in Brandon. This is a couple of years ago now. And I was saying, you know, that I didn't like the CGI Hulk. And you convinced me otherwise. I got to say you were a very good pusher, I guess you could say, of the CGI Hulk and what they did and why he had to be that way as opposed to, you know, the Lou Ferrigno Hulk. So
I mean, nothing wrong with Lou Ferrigno by any means. He actually did the voice of the Hulk in this movie, by the way. But okay. Which I think that's kind of interesting, but I mean, it's just the problem with the Hulk is he has to be a certain size, and there's just no human being that is the size that you need, type thing. Right. Like, you obviously saw there's a scene with him and Thor standing next to each other, and he's much bigger than Thor.
Yeah,
and he's invulnerable. Like, I mean, you have to kind of to have him take on some of the villains he's going to take on. He has to be a certain size.
Right, and I can remember seeing, you know, and this was back to the Eric Bana one that you and I were chatting about, and you know, it's kind of funny. We were doing our show 2 years before it ever happened, you know, sitting around a plate of nachos at the keg talking about it.
Yeah.
But, you know, the fact of the Hulk, like, running along the wall and jumping up and punching helicopters and all that, I was just like, this is crazy. And then, like I say, you're a good pusher in that fact and saying, no, this is the way it has to be for it to work.
Well, I think the biggest thing about that movie, and we have to remember that that movie was before all of these other ones kind of fell into place. But that one was done by Ang Lee, and great director. Like, I loved his visual style in the movie, but it wasn't a great script, and that's what really killed that movie, unfortunately. A lot of people thought it was the CGI graphics for that one, and I really think it was just that it needed to be a comic book writer, which I think that's a great segue into the Avengers and why the Avengers work so well.
For sure. I'm thinking, I don't know whether he was involved with the writing, but Joss Whedon.
He was.
Screenplay, Joss Whedon.
Zach Penn wrote the play, wrote together.
Right. And they're kind of comic book folklore now.
Oh, well, and that's the thing. A lot of people know Joss Whedon from Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel.
Right.
He also, after those shows ended, he actually went over to comic books. And he wrote about like a year and a half of the X-Men. He did the season, I think it was 8 of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Okay.
He knows comic books. He really does. And that's what makes this movie so good, is that he does that and he knows it. And he knows what's going to work in this movie for a script-wise.
For sure. I remember him definitely from, short-lived series. But a couple of folks that I was living with at the time were big fans of Firefly.
Yes, only lasted a year. Great movie, Serenity, by the way, too.
For sure, yeah. And I can remember seeing that one in the theaters and thinking to myself, why am I going to this movie? And you know, they were good pushers in the fact that they said, no, you have to see this movie. And I was quite impressed with it. Talking a little bit about comic book movies, superhero movies, this next 2 months is going to be kind of a counterpunch with Marvel and DC. Yeah.
Oh, very much so. Well, I mean, Marvel's got 2 films, though we have to remember that I think Spider-Man is through a different studio than the Avengers. And it's just because of they did the Spider-Man movies first, the ones with Tobey Maguire, right. And it was before Marvel got bought out by Disney. It's Summer of the Superheroes. And, you know, a lot of people are saying now that, wow, The Dark Knight Rises has a big fail to try and make the same amount of money that the Avengers made. And I don't really expect it to. I expect it to be in close the same range as The Dark Knight, as the second movie. I'm not sure if it's going to quite hit the Avengers, but it's going to be interesting to see, because I remember The Dark Knight when it came out, it held on for quite a few weeks, too. It might hold on for longer. It's hard to say. I mean, it's going to be number 1 next week, obviously. It might be number 1 for about maybe two more weeks, but then we start seeing all these movies come out again, and people crave summer movies, so it might disappear faster than you think.
For sure, and The Dark Knight kind of had a resurgence near the tail end of its theater life with Heath Ledger's passing.
Well, yeah, exactly, and I think you'd hate saying that influences kind of its view to the world type thing, but the other thing that The Dark Knight had that I don't think The Avengers quite had, The Avengers has got some great critics reviews, but The Dark Knight was on a different level. It was almost like the first comic book movie that the critics really respected and really said, wow, this is a movie that could be considered one of the best movies of the year. In fact, there was so much talk that it was going to be nominated for Best Picture that year. That, right. I mean, it didn't happen, but Heath Ledger got the acting nomination for it, which, again, is almost unheard of, because you never see those movies get nominations.
Sure. Looking at with Heath Ledger there, and this is a nice segue into talking about the cast, some big hitter names in this, you know, especially I don't think any bigger than Robert Downey Jr. as far as billing in the movie. But you got some big names as well, you know, Scarlett Johansson, Mark Ruffalo, as we've talked about, Chris Evans as Captain America, Tom Hiddleston as Loki. There's some big names playing here. Run the risk of it becoming the actors becoming bigger than the story or the film?
You know, and honestly, you would think that, right? I mean, I did think of this one that Robert Downey Jr. had a little bit bigger part, Like, I think he had, just because I think, because his movie was the one that really started off. Like, Iron Man was really the movie that started this whole thing off.
Right.
But what's the, again, and all more credit to the people who made this movie, was that they made sure that no one really stuck out so much more than the other characters. It really was a group movie, and it really was about how each of them got along with each other. There's so many great scenes where they're intermingling, and different characters are different characters. Like, Black Widow with Captain America and Hawkeye on the ground during the invasion was quite neat to see, actually. Seeing Hulk and Thor going at it. That's something like every comic book person has dreamed of, pretty much. Seeing Captain America dealing with Thor, or dealing with Iron Man in their own kind of idealistic differences and such. That's what's the power of this movie, is they knew how to take characters and mix them around and see what the combinations were like. And we're going to see that even more in the later movies, because we know there's going to be a sequel. So,
yeah. Is that kind of indicative of what the comic books were like?
The characters being like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I know with the Avengers, it was very much like that. It was very much about how do these heroes get along with each other. And I remember like the early issues were about that, because the Hulk actually didn't last very long in the Avengers, because I think they just realized his character was a little limited sometimes.
Right.
But in later years, there's actually an Avengers cartoon show, and it's very similar type of premise, in that all these characters are just kind of coming together and they're learning to get along, but they're also learning about their differences and what keeps them apart. And I think that's what's great about this versus something like the Fantastic Four, which felt like more like they're already a team. They were never really apart. They were never their own people. This is different. These are all characters who are all very different, have their own villains, have their own personalities, and their own, again, ideologies that differ them from the other characters and how they start off. Like the idea that, like, Tony Stark comes from money, where Captain America is all about, like, it's that passion for
good versus evil.
Yeah, exactly. And Thor, it's that mentality of God versus human, and what the human can aspire to type thing versus what he has. You know, there's a lot of neat elements and how they conflict with each other. And I think that's what makes the Avengers so interesting.
I was looking forward to chatting with you about this movie tonight. And as well, I one thing that I really picked up on, and they do it fairly well in, especially in the first Iron Man movie, there's a lot of humor in this movie.
There's a lot, and that's what makes it so accessible to everybody. I was reading the numbers today. I was doing all this reading on the movie,
right,
and its audience. There's some great things going on. First of all, the numbers of people below 25 and above 25 were almost equal coming to this movie.
Right.
Male to female was almost equal.
Wow.
What was the other thing they said? There's a lot of great things. So this movie's catching so many different audiences, and that's a rare, rare thing. It literally, everyone was buying a ticket to this movie, and that rarely happens when you go to the theater. Like, you see, like, an audience kind of like, either under 25 being the main people. This movie wasn't like that. It was actually very much an all-around audience, and I think that's that tells you a lot about the appeal of this movie, that people really got into this movie, they got into the idea, and it didn't exclude anyone.
For sure. I know, you know, you typically think of a comic book movie as kind of a, because of a lot of what's happening in it, a fairly male-centered movie, not to sound chauvinist or anything like that, but you do think of it as a male-centered movie, where your target demographic are people like you and I. That
yeah, very much so.
Reading those comic books and now have the disposable income to go out to these movies. That's really interesting to hear that it was a split pretty well across the board.
Well, and you know, when they introduced the character of Black Widow into it, I was always a little skeptical, because I wasn't sure if she'd be a strong enough character. But Scarlett Johansson really did they really made sure that she didn't disappear. And I think that really helped the women identify this movie.
Sure.
She's a very strong character in this movie. Like, there's that I don't want to give away too much. There's the when she meets with Loki that one time.
Yeah.
And it was just a beautiful scene, how it played out and everything. And it displayed that, you know, the female character could be just as strong as the male character. She may not have the bulk that the Hulk has or Thor has, but she could definitely have the skills to keep up with them at least.
Yeah, the one scene that really stood out for me, and it was such a simple line and such a quick line, and this is a bit of a spoiler, but we obviously know that Thor and Loki are brothers.
Yeah.
And when they mentioned to him in that kind of war room meeting,
he says,
he's my brother. And, you know, they say, well, he's killed 80 people. And, you know, his response.
Did he say yes? Oh, he's adopted.
He's adopted, right? You know, and it's so simple a line. And I just howled with laughter at it.
Because... Oh, our audience just totally got into that. And it's, you know, it's kind of the growth of the characters of being human and such. And I could never imagine Thor saying that line unless he'd already been to Earth before that. You know what I mean? Right. If they're having the Thor movie beforehand where he did come to Earth, I could never imagine him saying that, but it made sense.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Looking at kind of the comic book film genre, can you maybe we'll discuss a little bit the art of making a good comic book film? What do you think the directors and especially the screenplay writers do to stand out, to be different than those 1970s comic book? You know, I remember the Amazing Spider-Man from the 70s. It was awful. It was terrible.
Oh, the live action show?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I remember watching that from beginning to end on a Thanksgiving weekend.
Right.
I mean, it was what it was. I mean, that's what we have to remember. They didn't have the technology to do a lot of the stuff to make it look that great. Like, I mean, we're very fortunate now that we have the technology to make movies like that. But you're right. There's, first of all, to be able to use the villains that we can use now. I mean, if you probably noticed, a lot of those TV shows and stuff didn't use any of the villains that were in the comic books because they didn't know how to make them happen.
Right.
A lot of them are very, like, so creative and so out there that the TV people didn't have the budget to actually do it. And we have to remember the comic books in the 70s, there were some popular comic books. Like, the X-Men was very popular in the 70s. Batman became popular again in the 70s. But generally, they weren't as popular. There's a lot of dark comic books that came out of the 70s, and they weren't very... audience safe, I guess, in a lot of ways. Like, characters like Ghost Rider, a lot of the horror comic books came back at that period of time. But how to make this into, like, what makes a really good film for a comic book audience as well as anyone dealing with this topic matter, I think it's that you have to have moments where the action dies down a little bit. And I think that we see that in this movie. We saw a lot of moments where there was some really great buildups of action scenes, like the little fight in the woods between Iron Man and Thor was very interesting because it was nice. It kind of took away from another moment. There was a nice balance. There's kind of like, I think it's almost the essence of any good film is that there's almost like a little bit of a roller coaster going up to the action. And I think that's how this movie really works well. It builds the action. The level of action gets bigger and bigger and becomes more important. But it didn't forget the humor of all the situation, which helped. I mean, I think the humor in this is what actually helps this movie. It can get... The Avengers was never really overly serious. There are always these wise kind of cracking kind of characters there, where Batman's obviously a little different. He makes some jokes, but he's very much in a darker realm, I think.
For sure. The one moment that kind of stood out is... And it almost looked out of place. And mm-hmm. I don't know what your opinion of it was, but Gwyneth Paltrow as Pepper Potts, obviously from the Iron Man movies.
Yeah.
And I don't know what what was sticking out for me about this moment, but did you notice her wardrobe?
Really sexy, huh?
Different. Absolutely. You know,
it's interesting. I actually didn't think she was going to be in it. I totally forgot she was going to be in the movie. I think the only problem I had with that was because they start to define their relationship a little bit at the end of Iron Man 2.
Right.
I felt like this actually kind of jumped the gun on it a little bit.
Yeah.
I would say I agree with it. It was a little stronger than I was expecting. But I can see where they were trying to tie in the movies so that you could have this kind of flow. I mean, the chances are that you didn't go into this movie without watching at least one of the other movies.
Right, yeah.
So
yeah.
I get, you know, that moment was a little different sometimes.
Yeah. It was just something that I found a little awkward. And just for our listeners, so they know what they can put it into perspective, what we're talking about. Pepper Potts throughout the Iron Man movies was fairly straight laced, you know, business suit attire, that type of thing. Her first reveal in the Avengers, she's almost kind of wearing like Daisy Duke shorts. And I just, it just looked tremendously out of place. Not that that was a bad thing, you know, and they obviously did it for a reason, but it just looked really out of place as far as what you've believed her character to be up to that point.
Well, I guess it's at this, well, yeah, it's interesting because, well, up to this point though, she's kind of on her own. So I guess, you know, the idea is that her and Robert Downey Jr. finally kind of relaxed and right. They're not just, you know, she can run the office without wearing the suit type thing.
I guess so, yeah. And it, like I say, it just, I'm sitting in the theater and I'm thinking to myself, you know, it just caught me off guard, I guess you could say, as far as a look that we had been used to. And also, too, you know, I am glad that they do make the Scarlett Johansson character. There is a sexiness to that character, but it's
very much so.
Kind of similar to what I think they're going to do in The Dark Knight Rises with Anne Hathaway, where it's not a Halle Berry over the top sexed up character. It is a, you know, and that was the problem with the Halle Berry Catwoman.
Well, there's a lot of problems with Halle Berry's Catwoman. That's just one. Okay.
For sure. But you know, you look at that film in general and it was more about, you know, being essentially a skin show than it was the actual film. And I hope they do that with Anne Hathaway in Dark Knight Rises. Is it's about the character, and I think they did a good job with Black Widow and Scarlett Johansson of it being about a powerful, strong woman character that's kicking, you know, kicking some expletive insert here in the movie.
Oh, very much so. Oh, I think they actually kind of kept pretty close to her costume too from the comic books as well. So, I mean, well, her secondary costume, her first costume actually was much different. She actually wore a dress at the beginning, but in the comic books, which would make no sense in this movie whatsoever.
Right.
But no, I think you're right. I mean, they, I think we've come to the point now where we don't have to do that to women. But and then of course I had to think back to those. To the Fantastic Four movies, which, I mean, I like the Fantastic Four movies, but the scenes where they have to make the Invisible Woman always be naked at one point.
Yeah.
And both movies had it. And it was like, you know something, this is over. This is done. And I'm glad that this movie didn't have that. It didn't have a scene where she was in a shower. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
It so easily could have gone that way. But I think, again, it's the writer. We have to remember that Joss Whedon is the person who created Buffy, or who made Buffy cool. We're not to say created, because there was a movie before. But he made Buffy cool. And she was also a character who could be sexy, could be tough.
Right.
Didn't have to wear the skimpiest outfit alive to get through.
Right. And I'm really glad that they've gone that way with this movie, that they realize, you know, it doesn't have to be that sex sells. It shows that there can, like say, be a really powerful, strong female figure in that movie that doesn't have to, you know, have a gratuitous shower scene or whatever the case may be that has happened in so many films where you just kind of sitting back. And I can see why they're doing it, because they want to fill seats with 18, you know, 18 to 21 year old guys. But at the same time, you're just like, you're doing this again.
I know, but you know something, and this, and I hope your viewers are okay with this, but, honestly, I probably knew more people who were in there lusting over Thor than they were going for Black Widow.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, that's completely fine. And but it's just nice to see that they have, you know, those strong characters like that, that don't have to be over sexified like Halle Berry, you know,
exactly.
Which is terrible.
It
was just terrible to say, you know, Halle Berry was an Academy Award winner for Monsters Ball, and then, you know, she had to do a movie like Catwoman where, you know, she's wearing next to nothing.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, there's so many problems with that movie. But that was one. The costume wasn't even, like, remotely close to what the costumes were for Catwoman. And don't get me wrong, Catwoman has had, like, 20 costume changes, but nothing like that.
For sure. Well, we're going to switch gears a little bit here. First of all, we've got coming up in the theaters this week in Brandon, we've got American Reunion still holding on. We've got Marvel's The Avengers, obviously, and in Real D 3D, which if you can spare the extra couple of dollars, please go out and see it in 3D. It is a different experience in 3D, and I really enjoy it.
Yeah. I saw it in 3D as well, too. So, I'm sure I would enjoy the movie anyways, but in 3D it was quite amazing to watch.
For sure. Then next up, we've got the movie Safe. The 5-year engagement, which is kind of bombing at the theaters right now. and a movie that apparently Jason Segel had to lose a fair bit of weight for. I was reading an article online, not that, you know, he was overly heavy before that, but he is quite a fair bit skinnier in this movie. And interesting to say, will it work for him? It hasn't so far. You look at what happened with, I'm blanking on the name Superbad right now, Jonah Hill. He's put all the weight back on.
Yeah, he did actually. Maybe it's just human having that size. I mean, it's like Seth Rogen as well too. I mean, I think he kept a lot of the weight off, but I mean, everyone has a different body size. So I mean, you know, and I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing. It's too bad about the 5-year engagement not doing as well. I mean, I haven't seen it yet, but it looked quite funny, and I like Emily Blunt very much. I think she's a great actress and stuff. So it's kind of a shame it's not doing as well.
Yeah, rounding out here, we've got the lucky one. The Pirates Band of Misfits in Real D 3D, obviously a family-friendly film there.
I really want to see that, by the way. That movie looks so funny, actually.
With a G rating, and then closing out The Raven, which is the Edgar Allan Poe.
It kind of bombed, too.
Flick. Yeah, it kind of bombed. One that I'd kind of like to see.
I see it.
I like the work of Edgar Allan Poe and the kind of darkness that goes on there.
I like John Cusack, so.
Yeah. Flipping over, we got the Evans looks pretty quiet right now.
As
upcoming movies. Let me just take a look here. Yeah, there's no upcoming movies currently, unfortunately, at the Evans. We're going to jump over to Seven Ages Productions. Seven Ages Productions actually has May 12th this week coming up. We've got Winnie the Pooh. Now I know this is a collaboration as well with George's class as well that he does teach in theater, so it should be quite good and fun for the whole family to check out. I believe that's it'll be next Saturday, I think it is.
And Winnie the Pooh is such a classic character, and it's kind of neat considering he's kind of created by Canadians, so that's kind of cool too.
Absolutely. Jumping over Mecca Productions, I know you're going to have to go on Facebook because I'm blanking on the date right now, but they do have a show coming up on Broadway 6. Just give me one sec. I'm going to take a look here. Coming up at the Westman Centennial Auditorium. Sorry, computer's being slow, and that looks like it's going to be Monday, May 14th, 7:30, and it's at the WMCA. And okay. It's a celebration of Broadway music with over 200 singers. So,
oh my Lord, that's amazing. That's, and you know, some of those are the great things to go to. And the reason why I say that, like, yes, you don't get the story, and you don't get the full show, but what you do get from those types of shows is you hear a song, you go, "Wow, that's a great song. I wonder what it's from," and then you go out and find that show. And so I think that's the great thing about shows like that. So I encourage anyone to go out. If you don't know a lot of musical theater, there are also great shows to go to so that you can find shows that you may enjoy versus going to see one show where you may not get into it, but you'll see songs from like maybe 18 shows type thing. That I think it's a great thing to go for people who have never gone to see musical theater very much. I think it's a good thing to go see.
Definitely. And next up, we've got this is the following week, but we're going to give a little bit of a plug for it right now. The Outcast Theater Company, of which shameless plug here, I am a founding member of the Outcast Theater Company. And Stephen definitely knows a lot about the Outcast, as his brother is one of the founding members as well. They've got a show next week coming up at the Evans Theater that I want you to go check out. It is The Cripple of Inishman. They put it on at the ACT Festival here in Manitoba this past weekend. It was up in Neepawa. And this is going to be a good show. It's got some great folks involved in it. It's directed by Craig Russell. And Brandon, people would know Craig Russell as the author of the award-winning novel The Black Bottle Man.
Wow, that's excellent.
So,
is this a remount from the ACT Festival?
It is. They took a... Because the ACT Festival, you have to be under 60 minutes. They took a portion of it to the ACT Festival, and now this is the whole show that they're going to be putting on. I will get the dates up on the website as well. I'm going to try and talk to Craig Russell, who's heading up the direction of it, and Christine Penner, who is also one of the leads on that show. So I will definitely be talking to them this week, so be sure to check back on the website. And speaking of the website, as I mentioned in the intro, I just want to flip over some audio here right now. I want to play an interview with you from Eric Markowitz. Eric Markowitz is a Brandon boy, born and raised. He's a graduate of Vincent Massey High School, and he's also a graduate of the Brandon School of Dance and one of the marquee dancers for the Brandon School of Dance for a number of years. He has gone places. I tell you with this, folks, he uprooted his life. He moved to Toronto, Ontario, which Stephen can definitely attest to that, getting out and going and chasing your dream. And I give Eric a ton of credit. I had a chance to talk to him this week, so I'm just going to jump over to that audio, and we'll be right back.
So first of all, the show is Le Cajafol, the Birdcage. How has the experience been for you so far in, you know, the professional theater world? I know you did a bit with Rainbow Stage last year and all that, but to really be a ways from home with it as well.
For sure. I picked up and I moved to Toronto in October, which was a great, great thing for me to do. I felt like I needed to get to the big city, so I moved to Toronto in October. I got myself an agent there, and then I just started auditioning. It started off a little slower than I expected, but it picked up in the new year in January when Le Cajafol had their auditions, and I went to the auditions, booked the job, and then now I've been out in Halifax for the past couple months here. We had 3 weeks of rehearsals, and then we're just about halfway through our run with the show. So it's been great, and I've wanted to do this all my life, and I'm excited that I finally get the chance to be on stage every night. We have 8 shows a week. Our only day off is Monday, and I haven't had any problems with that. I've been homesick a little bit now that I'm on the other side of the country, but my parents will be out at the end of this month here to see the show, and I'm excited to have them out here. So it's been a great experience so far.
Excellent. How does the dancing compare with, you know, obviously you've done a little bit of everything, classically trained in ballet for sure, but how does the dancing compare to something, you know, some of the other stuff you've done?
This show is very different because being a part of Le Cajafol, all of the male dancers are actually playing drag queens. So we are all in full makeup, full heels, full tights, all of that. So this show has been a very big challenge for me, thinking I thought it was going to be a little bit easier than I expected, but once we put on those heels, you're a completely different person. And same amount of athleticness that you need for other shows like Cats and Hairspray that I've done in the summer, but this show, very different, and it's rewarding. I can say it's rewarding for sure to step on that stage and have the audience reaction that they've been giving me, that they love it, and it just pays off that, yeah, we're in heels, but and the pain that comes along with wearing heels. But it pays off for sure knowing that the audiences are loving it.
What do you have coming up next, obviously, once this show is finished up?
Once this show is done, it finishes on May 27th, so I'm heading back to Toronto for all of June and part of July, and then I will actually be returning back to Winnipeg to do Annie out at Rainbow Stage. So it'll be nice to be closer to home for a little bit, and that'll take place all of August, so I'm excited to be back at Rainbow this summer for sure.
You know, obviously, Brandon School of Dance has done some major expansions here. They have their new studio space, you know, something that's close to your heart. What advice could you give to some of those younger dancers coming up or somebody that wants to follow this career path?
Really, you need to have a full mindset that this is what you want to do. You can't have any second guessing or anything. If you want to do it, you need to put 110% into it, and it will pay off, and it may not pay off right at the beginning, and it may take years of auditions and years of hearing the word no many times. You'll hear more no's than you will hear yeses, which is a big thing in this career, but it does pay off. And I can say that every time I step out on that stage and have the welcoming audiences that we do, it's what I love to do, and it's what I love to hear from them. And the reactions we've been getting is just beyond the roof. So it's very exciting, and it does pay off, and it's paid off for me for sure. And you just kind of have to keep training, and you can't think it's going to happen overnight, but it will happen at some point if it's truly what you want to do.
Awesome. You know, last question here for you. Looking at where, obviously where you've come from, where you've been now, a couple of seasons will be under your belt at Rainbow Stage, Halifax, Toronto. Where does Eric Markowitz go from here? Where's your goal? Where do you want to see yourself ending up?
My goal for my life definitely is New York City. At some point, I would love to be in a big old Broadway show. And I think it will happen at some point. I am very confident with myself that some point in my career I will land on Broadway, hopefully. But I don't think it's going to happen. It could happen in the next couple of years, who knows? But I'm willing to stay in Canada for a little bit longer and get some more professional shows under my belt in Toronto, all throughout Canada here. Definitely New York City and Broadway is where I hopefully will end up in my lifelong career.
Well, I have no doubt in my mind that you'll meet that goal, having known you for a long time since you were a young kid type thing, that you will meet that goal. I really appreciate you taking the opportunity to talk with me, and I look forward to sharing this with people in Brandon.
Yeah, thank you so much, and thanks for all the support. I've enjoyed everyone's feedback on Facebook and all of that from Brandon. It makes me feel closer to home. So thank you so much for this.
Okay, thank you very much once again. As we were talking to Eric Markowitz, and Stephen, I know you can attest to that life-changing moment of chasing your dream somewhere and being able to kind of see it come to fruition.
It's great when you see a younger artist kind of break out a little bit. And it's not to say that you can't do great art in the smaller communities like Brandon and such, but sometimes you have to take those leaps of faith and just kind of going out and leaving and going out into the world and seeing where things go.
Excellent. And like I say, you never say good luck in the theater, and it's odd to wish a dancer to break a leg. So I want to say, if Eric Markowitz is listening or any of his friends in Toronto there, best wishes to him and any of the friends here in Brandon. If you get a chance, hop onto his Facebook page, give him a hello, say thank you, best wishes to him, because he is definitely proud of the work he's doing out there, and it's just great to see him be successful. And his end goal, as you heard in the interview, and he has it definitely set in his mind, is New York City. And we wish him all the best in getting to that platform. As we're wrapping up here, Stephen, you were telling me before you got a couple of reviews coming up on the site in the next week and a bit. If you could share a little bit about what viewers can look for there.
Well, I'll definitely have the review for the Avengers coming up. I also have one for a movie I saw this weekend as well called Darling Companion, by writer director Lawrence Kasdan. I'm gonna have one up there for Monsieur Lazare. I don't think it was in Brandon for a very short period of time, but it's a wonderful movie I want to give some recognition to, as well as Café de Flore. Actually, I had a funny story going to the theater on Saturday. The Avengers, being, you think, this kind of youthful movie. I actually tried to go see, it's called The Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, done by the guy who did Shakespeare in Love, and has like Tom Wilkinson and Judi Dench and Maggie Smith. And I kid you not, it was completely sold out on both screenings on Saturday night,
Oh, wow.
because it was like the movie that everyone else went to. You weren't going to the Avengers. So I'm hopefully going to have a review for that at some point, because I really want to see that movie. But yeah, hopefully I'll have some more reviews up in the next little bit.
Excellent. If you could give a timeline, when do you think the announcement comes for the second Avengers movie?
The second Avengers movie. I would guess probably 2014. And I don't want to give away anything, but I'm just going to say one word. Thanos. There we go. That's my word. Thanos.
Thanos. So if people want to read more into it than that, definitely take a look and head out to see the Avengers, because you will see what Steven is talking about. And I was a little uneducated on it, but I was very happy that Steven was able to kind of bring me up to speed on what that meant. I will leave it at that. I'll just leave it at that. It's
away, because we've already given away too many spoilers already. So
we give away spoilers, and people know that, but it's all the nature of being able to come on here and talk with you about movies. And speaking of here, Once again, I'd just like to make a closing mention and thanks once again to Jill Ferguson and the great team over there at CJ 106.5 FM, the Alternative Edge. That's the Assiniboine Community College Radio, which we're on right now. It's nice to have support in the community like that. And if you ever do want to get involved in radio or want to give a show a try, they are great. They have some great courses there and they have the ability to put you on the airwaves. So if you do get a chance, get out there, check them out. They do a lot for you. So check that out. Thank you once again to Stephen as well.
Thank you very much
for joining me and sharing his wealth of comic book knowledge with us. And with that, we are looking at the end of the show. Thank you once again to everyone for listening. As always, our podcasts are available online through iTunes by searching What's Up Westman. As well, they are available on our website, whatsupwestman.ca, where we cover entertainment happenings, community theater happenings, and a whole lot more that's going on in our community. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you again real soon.